I'm Stephen Maloney. I played McCoy.
My name is Dan Glazer, and I was I wrote the film along with Stephen, and am the director, producer, and one of the producers, and the editor as well.
That's a lot of hats, you guys.
Yeah, he's like a coat rack over here.
Today I'm the director.
That's gonna go on my. That's gonna go on something. So he's like a coat rack.
Steve. Put it on your business card.
There we go.
Director, coat rack.
Stephen, you also have a lot of hats on this, and one of them is also acting in the film. How difficult was this for be able to, you know, be a co-writer and also one of the producers?
Well, you know, it came in three neatly packaged stages, where stage one was, you know, we write it and sort of develop it and build a team around it, and there we were able to sort of focus on, like, okay, we're writing this thing and we're getting that script into a place that we're as happy with it as
which
possible.
Is really where we started too, actually.
Yes,
yeah. Was before we'd even sort of gotten involved for sure, you know, offered to make the film. We started off.
That's true. We actually weren't sure that we were going to be making it. We hoped we would.
But
we weren't sure at the beginning. At first it was like, well, let's just write it and hope for the best.
We'll see where it goes. Yeah.
And so then we had this whole great production team and wonderful crew to sort of lift that load, so that I was able to focus solely on acting when. You know, that's what it was time to do. So, and then when production wrapped, then it was post-production, and the producer hat was able to come back on a little bit, and we were able to sort of oversee and see how things were going. But every step of the way, we've had this great team of people to just sort of carry us along.
At the head of it, that of course, current. Is John Wanzek. It's sort of his.
Yeah.
Passion project, really. When we got involved, it was something that he himself had wanted to do for years. He'd wanted to do. He'd been looking to make a film. We're all from North Dakota originally. Actually, Steve and I live out here now. John still lives in North Dakota.
Yeah.
So he really wanted to make a film that like highlighted our home state. Specifically the Badlands, where he also has a beautiful cattle ranch that we were lucky enough to shoot on for a large part of the movie, as well as out in the actual Badlands themselves. And so he had really just wanted to do a film that highlighted the beautiful scenery of North Dakota, you know, sort of eschewing, you know, all the tax incentives that you could get for faking it out here, or, you know, New Mexico, or, you know, Canada, which, you know, was a risk on his part, but he was one he was willing to take, and I think the authenticity it lends the film is excellent.
It meant a lot to him to really capture the place for the place.
And then, yeah,
not call Utah North Dakota or anything like that.
Not to point too strong a finger at some other programs that have... You want to know what? The show Fargo does a really great job of making Canada look like Minnesota.
Yeah.
You do a really great job. But otherwise, you see all this stuff that being from the area, you're like, no, that's not.
There's no mountains there.
Yeah.
There's nothing but land.
But it was, so that was important. That was one of the stages of the script he was... that he approached us with, and the other was the paleontology angle. He himself has a good friend who's a commercial paleontologist that he had gone down on digs with him and was just fascinated by it. And I can't speak for Stephen, but my inner 13-year-old, when he said dinosaurs, were like, dinosaurs, you say? I like dinosaurs. I think we can find something to do here. So, but, you know, there's obviously a very big difference between something like Jurassic Park, which is what dinosaurs conjures up immediately, I think, for most pop culture savvy individuals, and doing a film that really treats, like, the dinosaur does not come to life.
Spoiler alert, apologies to many of you, the dinosaur is dead the whole time.
It's not a walking, terrifying skeleton at the end.
It's
just
movie,
bones.
Its movie happened like 62 million years ago.
Yeah, the T-Rex's movie was done, yeah.
Yeah.
No flashbacks, yeah. It's our buried treasure in the film.
Yep, it's true.
So from that, you know, we had been doing another film when we met John, and that's how we sort of got offered this project, so we sat down and started working on the script with him and developing it and saying, okay, that's a start. Where do we go from there? How do we... Because it can be very easy, as interesting as paleontology is, it can be very difficult to make it interesting in a film because it's such a labor, you know, it's such a process and it takes a lot of time and it's, you know, it's very careful and very minute.
You know, it happened to make for a wonderful documentary in Dinosaur 13.
Yeah, Dinosaur 13 was excellent research, actually.
It was wonderful, yeah.
I think in...
It's a great reference point.
2014, I want to say, and we were lucky enough to get a chance to watch it while we were researching, and it really provided. It's about them uncovering the largest to date intact T-Rex at the time in South Dakota. Dinosaur 13 was very informative for us coming into knowing, you know, about as much as paleontology as anyone that's watched Jurassic Park. So it's funny, the amount of stuff we now know about paleontology and the amount you can actually put in the script is... It's funny how much research you do versus how much is in the film.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
But so we started
there used to be a lot more paleontology in the script than there ended up being.
Yeah, which screen. I think audiences would probably thank us for that.
no offense.
No offense to paleontology, but I think a lot of the sciences are probably very similar in that way. But in any case, so then you know we're from Fargo. Which is all the way on the east side of the state. It's almost it's right across the river from Minnesota. It's like right up against Minnesota, and this takes place 5 hours away on the other side of the state, and which I hadn't really spent a whole lot of time in, even growing up in North Dakota. And so we were researching. You know, there'd been an oil boom in recent years, and we'd you know been able to sort of like start researching. Okay, how did that you know oil and fossils, you know, fossil fuel and actual fossils are very you know directly related, you know, and so we started researching there and eventually got to a point where we realized that as with any boom, as with any business, that suddenly all of this money is floating around, there's obviously going to be a dark element that comes with it. So we realized that we had all this cartel activity that had come up because of where there was money, then there was meth production, and when there was drugs, then there came the cartel, and they were trading guns for drugs, and ATF was out there, and we were just reading all of this sort of dark underbelly stuff that we had no idea, and our families lived on the other side of the state. We hadn't heard anything about this. So as unbelievable as it maybe seems, some of the stories we were reading are actually much more stranger than what we actually partake in the movie. So,
right.
So I know it kind of went off topic there. But.
Yeah, I'd love to hear some more of your guys' questions.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you were talking about the drugs and the stuff, and his character is, mm-hmm. is a heavy-duty...
McCoy's. Yeah, his yeah. addict, yeah. You should talk a little bit about that, about the process of
So much drugs did you try?
Yeah.
All of the drugs. I made new ones just to try them.
They're going to print you on that. You're going to have a Twitter statement saying, well, let me clarify.
I'm just a drug vacuum. No, I did not do any drugs. I
also he's a devout method actor, so I went to him and I went, now this doesn't mean you're going to be doing any drugs, right? And he was like, I won't do anything that poisons my body.
The thing is with like, you know, method should not include, I mean, at the end of the day you got to be a blank slate so you can go be the next guy. But if you put something like that in your body, I mean, that stuff can be one and done, and you're an addict, and now that's something you're carrying over to the next guy, and the next guy probably doesn't have addiction, maybe. So it's like, you know, you don't want anything that would kill you. but there were ways that I was able to, you know, circumvent actually taking it in ways that... you know, you can simulate the experience and simulate the feeling, and at least try as hard as you can to pursue an understanding of somebody else's struggle and somebody else's experience with it.
And I spoke specifically to reached out and
yeah, I got to know a guy, Eric Hollingsworth, and he was kind enough to. Really share his life with me. And I mean, this is a guy who's coming up on 6 years of clean time, so that's huge. You know, he's got a family now, a house and everything. He's doing really well. But he was addicted himself to meth for years, a long, long time. And his story was scarily in line with McCoy's story. And
I remember scary, especially because we'd already written it.
Yeah, we'd already written it, and
he gave the script to read, right?
And I gave him a call, left him a voicemail, and he told me, you know, my voicemail gave him chills because he was like, "You just described my life," and you know, so he was kind enough to share with me his experience, and he even, for anyone who, you know, knows the 12-step program, he gave me his fourth step, which was, I mean, so incredibly gracious and selfless, and to me an invaluable thing. And I, you know, I knew that was something to be cherished and not to be taken for granted. And it really helped me. And it was, I mean, you're playing around with people's lives sometimes as an actor and as, you know, filmmakers and writers, and you want to portray that with as much love and respect and care that you possibly can. And, you know, through the course of getting to know Eric and hearing his story and meeting, you know, lots of the people that he introduced me to, because he brought me in on a couple meetings and things. And so through the people that I met, I really came to realize that this was something that was, you know, much bigger than me, and I really just wanted it to be, you know, about them. It very much became about
being
authentic and really just, you know, trying to do justice to and properly represent those addicts who still struggle in active addiction and those who are recovering.
And in a lot of ways, I think addiction and specifically, you know, with McCoy, the meth addiction, meth sort of actually ends up becoming sort of the true villain.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we didn't, you know, we never wanted McCoy to be a monster. We wanted him to be this sympathetic character that hopefully people will root for and want to see get better and beat that adversity. But, you know, it's not him who's the monster. It's the drug that makes him a monster.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very Jekyll and Hyde sort of duality there.
Yeah, he's not a monster, but it can... It becomes monstrous.
Yeah,
you know,
just a good man gone wrong sort of thing, because
mm-hmm.
of circumstance.
Well, that was one part, one of the parts of the film that I did notice, that you definitely, was the Jekyll and Hyde, you really felt like you were actually on drugs, and that was kind of scary.
Good job.
Thank you.
Like, last night, they asked us for our reaction, and that's something that I pointed out. I was like, that was so lifelike and, like, accurate, the way, you know, how his whole life just kind of fell into that.
Thank you. I'm glad.
Well, I've worked with this guy now 3 times. This is our 3rd movie together, our biggest one to date, certainly our first one over $1 million for a budget.
Mm.
Our first one over 100,000 for our budget.
Yeah,
and
so
it was a big jump for us, and
we were
very gracious to John for believing in us.
We were making movies for butterscotch and bottle caps.
And but it was interesting because I feel like that sensibility, you know, we surrounded ourselves with composers and with you know, cinematographers and stuff that while I still think maybe we were the down and dirtiest of the bunch making things for under $100,000, they all had the sensibility that came at it. They were story driven. Everything that they did, if it's big for me as a director, that everything that you do be motivated by supporting the story. You know, every shot, every piece of costume, you know, like, you should have a conscious decision why this is blue and this is red, why this is, you know, uplifting and this is not, right? Like, it's our job as filmmakers to sort of try to lead the audience where we feel the story should go. And obviously the audience is the main writer, right? At the end, they react to it the way that they're going to react to it based on their lives. But these incredible artists that we surrounded ourselves with all sort of had the same dedication to the story and had the same dedication to putting all the money on the screen and like really stretching a dollar. And I think that that helped us create something that, that hopefully plays large, even though, you know, we weren't dealing with a studio-sized budget. We hope it feels like a studio-sized indie. So
it sounded like you had a short shoot period, like 20, 25 days?
25 days, I think, was about that.
Was that the total?
I think it was about 25 days, and then maybe a couple of pickups during. We squeezed some pickups in during our VFX plate shoot. So
we were
really doing kind of like pickups as we were doing the film. So there's really not a whole lot of extra material. The sort of what you see is more or less what we shot, which is kind of the goal anyway, right? Is you want to try to not, you know, anytime you're cutting scenes or you're you know, obviously you do it if you need to, but as you do that, you know, it's that bit of money could have gone to make this better, that could have gone to make that better. So in a way, we really appreciate how lean it is. I mean, it's you know, a straight 90 minutes and it's with credits, so it's a really tried to keep the pace. We wanted to like take the time when we could take the time, but you need to kind of earn it, you know what I mean? So in a way, I think the you know, lower budget in terms of, you know, greater Hollywood is concerned, and the quicker time, I think, forced us to make creative decisions and not to just shoot because we could, but shoot what we needed, you know what I mean? And so in a way it was valuable, you know what I mean? Is as stressful as it is, it I think encouraged creativity on set. So.
And also shooting on location.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That was a challenge I noticed.
Yeah.
Did you horseback ride too?
I did horseback ride.
Yeah,
I did. When we were location scouting, scouted on horseback. It was pretty great. Mm-hmm. I think Reese got the most out of the horseback ride.
Oh, man.
He was horseback riding like a fool, was he?
He mounted up every chance he could get. Yeah.
The question, hey, where's Reese, could always be answered with, on a horse somewhere.
I remember being jealous. Like, I was being hauled to set in a pass van, and I see Reese galloping by. I'm like, wait, we can ride horses to set?
Yeah, because, like, our production designer and him would be like, well, we got some time, and they'd go right on. Like, yeah, no, it was pretty magical experience. These were, you know, we're on the John's Ranch, you know, mm-hmm. So it's his horses in the film, and so much of, I mean, almost all of it is shot in North Dakota. We came to LA to do mostly interior stuff to kind of round out the last little bit of, because shooting in the Badlands was, I mean, it was difficult. You know what I mean? Like, it's there's not a single handheld shot in the whole movie. So trying to do that out in the Badlands was definitely
like those dollies level.
Yeah, it was that was definitely a challenge. But I hope that seeing the landscape that you don't normally see elsewhere adds something to it.
Well, the closing shot was one of my favorite shots. It was just sort of like, you know, when they were sitting
inside. Yeah, it was a great shot.
Dark.
Yeah, no, we were John took us out there to the Badlands. That's the little Missouri National Grasslands, sort of like south of Medora, but like south of Teddy Roosevelt National Park.
It was by the Hell Creek, wasn't it?
Yeah, so that's actually part of the Hell Creek Formation. Yeah. So literally around the corner, they are excavating their
actual dinosaur bones.
From when we scouted it to when we shot it, which was about a year, the like same dig was
dig
going
site.
On.
Yeah.
They were digging literally Triceratops in that location. So it's just nuts. It's very weird to be out there and to realize that, you know, what I mean, what Anna's saying is true. You see, like, this was supposedly one of the crater sites where the meteor was supposed to hit, and so, like, that's why it's fossil rich in that area, is because, you know, back then all of it was above ground and it was lakes and things, you know. So
any of the fossils there that you guys used in the film, were any of them real ones? Or?
Some of them, yeah, the little guys. None of the, like, cool big fossils you see in the movie were real. But yeah, there were some, definitely some, when you're seeing those close-ups of the brush and the tray, and there's definitely some dinosaur bones in there.
Absolutely. That was really, again, my inner 13-year-old was, like,
cool.
Loving to work with these. In fact, when we first met John, met with John to talk about possibly working on the script, he's like, oh, I have to take a call, hold on. He gives me something, and he goes, And he goes, hey, check this out, though. That's a T-Rex tooth. And he goes, like, and so I'm holding this thing going like, oh.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, this is the knuckle from a Triceratops.
It really is like, a surreal thing to just know in your mind that you're one of the first human beings to be touching this thing that's over 60 million years old. It's just kind of like, whoa.
I remember when we were watching, researching, there's something that they mentioned on Dinosaur 13 that always stuck with me, that like when you're out there digging as a paleontologist, that it's this amazing thing that below you is something that's over 60 million years old, and the stars above you, the light from the stars above you, have that they sent out the signal the time these things were alive, and they're just now getting to us because of and I was just like, I remember that early on, really like the sense of scope just sort of blew my mind. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I was like, wow, what an interesting concept, you know. So
yeah.
So now that you have this one under your belt, then now it's going to go out to the audience.
Yes. Yes. We hope everyone goes and sees it September 1st, right?
September AMC's 1st. AMC Theaters.
I think it's about 300 screens. So I know on the website you can see where it's playing.
Yeah, they've got the whole breakdown on there.
So if anyone's curious where it's playing near you, check it out on Valley Bones, themovie.com. That's the one.
So what, this is your third film together, you said?
Yeah.
The biggest one?
Yeah, the biggest one to date, yeah. So.
Are we working on the next project?
Yeah, a couple of things. We're writing something with John. Again, who's the producer of Valley of Bones. That's another project that he had sort of near and dear to his heart.
We're also, we're developing something with Autumn right now, too.
Absolutely, she approached us after the film, having had a good experience on the film. And we with her, we meet with her about once a week. We're like very close with Autumn, which is awesome. And so she had a project that she dreamt about, actually. She's like, this came to me in a dream.
I love that. That's the best stories come from dreams.
And so we're talking to her about that, and it's a bit of a period piece that we're developing. And then my cinematographer for Valley Bones, our cinematographer Michael Alden Lloyd, and I had known each other for years and were hoping for an opportunity to work together before this came along, and had been developing a psychological sort of thriller with sort of a bit of a horror bent, a lot more in the sort of like it's so encouraging to see. It's something we've been working on for years, but it's so encouraging to see all of like this sort of new wave of horror that's coming out. Things like The Witch and things like It Follows and Comes at Night and all these like Babadook, all these like really like artistic, challenging horror films, because I think the genre gets brushed away as schlock a lot, so I almost try not to call this thing a horror film. It's more of a psychological sort of thriller, almost Hitchcock sort of thing. But and so that's something that we're working on and pretty excited about, and hope to get on its feet pretty soon. So yeah.
Well, thanks you guys.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys.
Thank you.
It's been a
pleasure talking with you.
Thank you for your time. Me too.
Thanks.